have you all along tonight. This is a kind of an entree for you. It's the first segment we're going to be doing about this information that Harry is now free to publish and release. We've talked over the years a little bit about some of this off air, but this is going to be a, how many books do you anticipate from this data? One big fat one?
Probably not one big fat one. At least two, if not maybe three, between 200 and 300 pages each. And they'll be 8.5 by 11 format.
Yeah, that is the best format. It's easy to read. It's coffee table stuff. I am so. What's the proper word? Disheartened about Pizarro's son not following his father's example, integrity, his friendship with you, his trust and respect for you and for shark hunters, to make sure that this data gets to you. It's the only place on the world it should go. But if he's anything like his probably many of his contemporaries, he'll look to sell it. That's what he'll do.
Who knows? I told him I don't need the documents. Those are his forever, but I need information. And could I count on him for the information?
Send him another note, Harry. Maybe send him a copy of the program tonight. And we wish him the very best. But this is you are the venue that this material must go to, that his father wanted it to go to. No question.
Yeah.
None.
Yeah.
And I hope that he's an honorable young man. He probably is just fine. But let's get this done. Let's make sure that this part of history that has been stolen from all of us is allowed to be told for what it is, the truth. And this is where it needs to go. So what's the kid's name again?
Wolf.
Wolf, this is a personal appeal from all good people listening to this program around the world for you to make good on your father's wishes. Thank you, Wolf. All right, enough said.
Enough said.
Okay, picture number
nine,
the Altmark.
Yeah. This was an interesting thing because we all know about the Battle of the River Plate, where the Groff's Bay ultimately committed suicide and sank in the mouth of the Rio de la Plata. But Altmark disappeared, for the battleships. That battleship there, the Groff's Bay, didn't have room enough for fuel and especially food and provisions for the guys for a long time. So they had to have Altmark, which was a freighter, tagging along. Well, when Groff's Bay committed suicide, Altmark disappeared for about 3 months. And Pizarro has learned that she was hiding in one of these uplata in the Tierra del Fuego before she headed back to Germany. And that's her picture.
Keep in mind, just as a little aside here, that the Graf Spee did not commit suicide in the cowardly way. The skipper, the brilliant commander, decided that his crewmen deserved to live, that their situation tactically and strategically was really hopeless on the data that he had, and that he chose their lives over their deaths. And I think that's the highest calling of a skipper. So, bravo.
Right. And all his guys, other than the ones that got killed in the actual combat before they ducked into Montevideo, after that, he saved them all. But then he took his own life.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
You think about that. We didn't have, all right, I'm not knocking Americans or Brits or French, but I don't remember hearing many stories, and we don't hear much about World War II except that which they want us to hear. I don't remember many stories about integrity like that. That man's integrity was so, he wasn't a coward.
No.
He checked out because it was he failed. He failed his country, he felt. He failed on his mission. He saved his men, and he checked out. And
yeah.
We don't have stories like that of commanders and officers in other military units. Maybe there must be some, but I've never heard of any.
Yeah, we do. One of the, I think maybe the first Medal of Honor for an American submariner. Oh man, I can't remember. Gilmore, I think, isn't that Commander Gilmore? His boat was, he was a fleet commander of a group of submarines, and it got hit, and it was going to go down, and he knew too much about the stuff, and he told everybody, just abandon ship, get off, and he just sat down below in his quarters, and the submarine sank, and him with it.
Well, there's another example. See, war can do remarkable things, and
yeah.
Showing the integrity and sacrifice and bravery of people is one of the I guess the only good things about war, but it does.
Yeah.
Okay.
War,
the Altmark.
Bad news.
Yeah. Number nine, and I'll say it again because the Spitlickers claim that every year you and I have a happy birthday party for Adolf Hitler on April 23rd. And,
his birthday was the 20th.
Well, they missed it. I've seen they printed it on the 23rd. So,
I didn't even know about this birthday party. I'm missing all the cake and ice cream.
I know. Every year we have a birthday party, or Rents does, for Adolf Hitler and Cooper's involved.
On the 23rd? No wonder they're so screwed up.
That's what it said.
I believe you.
No.
But his birthday was the 20th.
Now, for those of you who did hear Harry earlier tonight mention that among the materials that Pizarro gave to him to release after 25 years was the location of Hitler's burial site. We'll leave it at that. You've shared enough with me. I know more than I should know. And he's well taken care of, and we believe that I believe that I'm speaking not for Harry. He and Ava Brown are in a very secure, safe place, which is guarded around the clock. And it's quite remarkable, the whole story. One day it'll come out. I don't think in our lifetime.
Yeah, and I don't think I want to divulge any of it, because not only is his body there, but he's surrounded by 12 black marble pillars. 12 was an important number to the Third Reich, because there were 12 apostles of Christ, and he was still a practicing Catholic, and also 12 knights of the Round Table. Oh, incidentally, we had one guy who joined Shark Hunters a year ago, and he thought it was the hot setup. He loved Shark Hunters. He loved our information, and I got an email from him a couple days ago to drop his membership because he found out Hitler was a Mason. I said, what? In the first place, you're wrong. He wasn't. In the second place, who the hell cares? But
talk about predicating your entire knowledge base on something so trivial as that. Come on.
Yeah. So we're better off without him.
All right. Well, whatever. If you out there haven't joined, and I know a lot of you listening haven't, you really ought to think about it. Harry is constantly giving things away or damn near, and the amount of information there is astonishing. All right, let's get back to our images, Admiral.
Back to the images. I talk too much, I know. So one other thing here, the raider Atlantis ducked into the Kerguelen Islands, and it's the farthest south of any German sailor's burial place. There was I forgot his name, but it's in this book that's coming out. It was a young German sailor, broke his leg while they were down in the Kerguelen Islands, and he had a blood clot ran up, and he died. So he's buried down there. It's the farthest south of any German Navy guy.
We have some extraordinary people listening to this program right now who are involved with shark hunters. Some aren't, but there are some extraordinary people, and Harry knows who I'm talking about, certainly in one instance. And we have always on this program tried to bring out history as it really happened. And that's
exactly.
been so much fun for me as a journalist to work with Harry on this. And Harry has outstanding contacts. Let me just leave it at that. So he's when he says something, you can take it to the bank. I mean a real bank, not one of their banks. All right, so there's the Atlantis right there, a raider. We could do a whole program on what raiders were.
Oh, yeah.
There it is. That's quite a picture. There's a little inlet right in the fore of the picture. You see it, and on the left there's a squared-off edge. It looks like they had a little, maybe a landing craft boat that would come in there and dock. And it looks like a
who
little
knows?
Dock. Yeah,
but they put in there to get in fresh water, and one of the guys on board, Captain Lieutenant Johann Heinrich Fehler, and he's photo number 11. He was a member of Shark Hunters, and he was told by Captain Ruge, commander of the Atlantis, to go ashore and find a way to get some of the fresh water out to the ship. Mm-hmm. And he was the demolitions officer on board, and he was making great plans on blowing up this, blowing up that on the island. And finally, Ruge says, why don't you just rig up a pipeline? Oh, okay. But I spent a
That's
whole
fine.
Day with Captain Fehler in his home, and he was commander of the last German cargo submarine. And that's the one that was in the middle of the North Atlantic when the war ended, and he came into Portsmouth Navy Base, and his boat had the 560 kilos of uranium on board and so much more, which is covered in a different book.
Yes. Which is what's the name of the other book?
That one is Hitler's Spy Web in South America, I think. No, it's in Hitler in Argentina, I'm sorry. And one of the guys who was on board that submarine was the world's leading expert on infrared triggers, and that's what got our atom bomb program restarted, because we weren't able to get the thing to go off properly. And this guy he became a member of Shark Hunters later, too, after the war was over, and he went into private business. He worked for a company up in Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. So, do you remember also that, I'm speaking for myself now, Hitler had the atomic bomb. He had atomic bombs. He chose not to use them for reasons we could spend a lot of time speculating on, partly, but otherwise not. He didn't. I think he was threatened that Germany would be nuked from one end to the other if he used them. I don't know, but they were supposedly on a railroad siding and freight cars in Czechoslovakia, some of them, and that 560 pounds or whatever it was of processed plutonium,
kilos,
2.2 pounds per kilo.
Yeah, it's about 1,200 pounds.
Yeah, was what at least one of the two bombs we dropped on Japan was constituted of. Okay? Just understand
that. Yeah, most likely
that was
the Hiroshima bomb, because that was a uranium bomb, whereas Nagasaki was a plutonium bomb.
That was probably a German bomb, all right? Understand that. And as far as the people go, I alluded to a few minutes ago listening to this program, especially one of our mutual friends, these are our highest quality people.
Yeah.
They know the world. They understand what's happening. And it's been a great trip to be along with Harry and all these programs and to meet people that are of such incredible integrity. So, good people. All right. Captain Fehler. Who gave him the roses?
Whenever the boats would come back, they'd be met with a band, and they'd give flowers to the captain, and they have a big dinner, and it was a big ceremony when they came back.
He looks like a very classy guy, at least dashing in his own get-up there.
Yeah, he was a merchant skipper before the war. And then he got drawn in, and he was a demolitions officer, and later on he was commander of U-234. Fun guy. I spent a whole day with him at his place. He was about 80 years old, and he and I were talking, and this young man, about 16, came in and gave him a kiss on the head and took off. I said, "What, is your grandson?" He said, "No, my son." The guy is 80 years old, and he had a 16-year-old son.
Good for
guy.
Him. Good for him.
Yep.
All right. I'll say one other thing about World War II, and I've said it before, and the Spitlickers want to have fun with it, fine. I don't care. Our last chance to have a world free of the kind of usury and central banking and all of that was Germany. There's much more to it. I'm keeping it real simple here. That war was a tremendous turning point, and it has not really stopped. The ramifications of Germany's loss have never stopped. We're still dealing with it today.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, more and more.
That's me talking, not Harry.
Right. So you look at number 12 and number 13. Okay, number 12, we know that's Kaltenbrunner, who was very, very high up in the Reich. And the other one is a Leutnantsersee by the name of Heinrich Garbers. He was decorated with the Deutsches Kreuz in gold, the German cross in gold, and then later on, the Knight's Cross. And this guy never got into combat. He never shot at anybody. Nobody ever shot at him. He never led a group of warriors over the hill to attack the other guys. Why did he get the Knight's Cross? I mean, there were 145 Knight's Crosses awarded to guys in the U-boats. And how did this guy get one? Okay, well, he drove a boat similar to, let's see, click on number 14. This was not his exact boat, but this was one just like it. So what? What about that? Well, he was going to South America from Europe. These are 90-ton boats, yawl rig, most of them. You'll see one further on, picture number 24. That's yawl rigged. There were 90 to 120 tons. They could carry cargo in and out of little coves in Argentina. Mm-hmm. And they were wooden boats, so they weren't spotted by radar.
The sailboat.
Yeah.
People.
A wooden sailing boat.
Yeah.
So they had a conversation, Kaltenbrunner and Garbers, and I'll quote this right out of the book. Kaltenbrunner said to Garbers, "The Führer personally read your reports. He admires you. He said to me, 'These are men of my liking, formed in the battles on land and storms of the ocean. They will secure the future of Europe.'" And they chatted for a while, and then Kaltenbrunner asked Garbers, "A small sailboat, well-trained like yours, could take a high-ranking personality to any point on Earth without being noticed by the enemy?" And Garbers said, "Yes, with a little bit of luck, yes." And Kaltenbrunner said, "And this small sailing boat could, for example, enter a secret base that can only be reached by a narrow canal?" And Garber said, "Yes, if it had an auxiliary engine." And Kaltenbrunner then said, "Thank you, Lieutenant. That is all." In other words, get the hell out of here now. So he was talking about the Caleta de los Loros, Parrot Cove, which is at the northwestern corner of one of the big gulfs. I think it's Gulf of San Mateo, but I'd have to look at my chart. But this is where they were coming in and going out all the time, these wooden boats. There wasn't one or two. There was 15 of them. And they were bringing in agents and bringing home agents. They were bringing in radio equipment and repair stuff for radio equipment and bringing in precious metals to pay off the Argentine people for looking the other way. So the spook works for the Third Reich in South America was well developed and well run. So they were way bigger in South America than the American intel group. So the meeting between Garbers and Kaltenbrunner took place in Berlin Fürstenwalde in November of 44, shortly after the August meeting in the Hotel Maison Rouge in Strasbourg, where the top bosses of German armament and supply industry had come together to ensure the existence of a new Fourth Reich after the end of the war. At this point, it was well known. I'm reading right off the book. At this point, it was known that the war could no longer be won, and it's very likely that the leaders of the Abwehr, which is their secret service, perhaps Kaltenbrunner himself, took part in the meeting at the Hotel Maison Rouge. So now we know that the German brass realized that they could not win the war. Now they listed here for the immediate implementation countries of refuge for the reconstruction of a Fourth Reich were Switzerland, Portugal, Spain, Turkey, and South America, with focus on Argentina. So, and they even talked about the overseas rat line. And there was an article in the Süddeutsche Zeitung, which means the South Germany newspaper, and also in the Schwäbische Zeitung, the Schwabenland Zeitung. And in this article, which came out in 1995, they said, quote, "The Nazi hunters are now only catching small fish," unquote. So the big guys were gone. And everybody knew the big guys were gone. They were all down in South America. Some went other places, but South America is where they all went.
Too bad Perón was tossed when he was.
Yeah.
This thing would have gone on and on, and would probably today still be, well, like Stroessner, huh? running things.
Yeah, Stroessner ran Paraguay, and he's dead now, but his son is a senator in Paraguay, and his nephew, I think they said, we call him the president, I think dictator is another word for it, but Paraguay is very, very German. Towns all have German names. There's German restaurants down there. As I've said before, I don't speak Spanish, but I get along okay with my German down there. And that's where Mengele had his headquarters. That's where Mengele, Bormann, and sometimes Hitler would meet at that one resort I told you about. It didn't go away. It just moved.
Well, that hotel out in the middle of nowhere mm-hmm. remains one of the most interesting programs we've ever done.
It's out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh.
Yep.
And there were, what, I think when you went in there one time in the whole dining room, there were two people eating. That was it.
That's right. Our four people plus two people who were staying at that hotel. And they must have had 100 rooms.
And it's still there.
And a beautiful place. There's pictures of it on my website. Yeah. Under patrols, yeah. Tours, under tours.
We should revisit that at some point soon. We got to keep moving here. Garbers, who does he look like?
I don't know. You tell me.
Paul McCartney.
Oh, so he does. I wonder if Garbers could play the guitar.
I don't know. And we get that was Paul McCartney really killed in the car crash in 1966 and then replaced with a lookalike. That's a whole nother story.
Yeah, a whole nother story that I know nothing about.
It's
I'll be Sergeant Schultz on this one. I know nothing.
Yeah. Well, I'll send you a link sometime for it, because it's worth a look. It is interesting. It is a possibility. Okay.
Okay.
Number 15, secret ops being revealed.
Right. And that's the guy with the blanked out face, that's Pizarro. And that book that's in front of him, that's laying on a table behind my seat right now. And the guy on the right is Oberleutnant Zorsee Otto Wermuth, who was commander of U-530 that surrendered in Argentina 2.5 months after the war ended. And the guy on the left, Charlie Grütemacher, he was an engineering officer on U-427, and he told me that they had, when the war ended, the surrender order came. They were up in Norway, and Norway was still under German control for about 3 months after the surrender. He said they filled their tanks to the brim with diesel fuel, and their freshwater tanks they filled with diesel fuel because they were going to dash out of there and head to Tahiti. Why Tahiti? Well, every sailor wants to go to Tahiti, he said, and they were going to break out, even though they were all ordered to stay in whatever port they were in and wait till the Allies got there. Right. And their flotilla commander, Teddy Suren, announced that he would personally shoot each and every officer on any U-boat that tried to escape. So they had to stay there and be taken over, because the Brits had said if anybody escapes, they're going to start killing prisoners. So this is in what Pizarro calls a fine tapas bar in Madrid, where this picture was taken. Right. I don't have a photo at all of Pizarro anywhere. The one or two I've got, he's blanked his face out like this. Oh, well.
Interesting.
Now we go to,
I bet a digital expert could remove a lot of that white and restore some.
It could very well be. I don't know. Yeah. I ain't him.
All right, next. Number 16.
Now we get into some real spook stuff. This is that island Trinidadi, not to be confused with Trinidad. This is a rock in the middle of the south central Atlantic, about 2.5 miles long by 1.5 miles wide, owned by Brazil. I've talked about it before. This photo, number 16, was shot in 1939. And if you look closely, you can see the little buildings up there on that plateau. That was their number two radio station. They built two radio towers when the Schwabenland expedition came there. The Brazil Navy pulled all their people off the island, and it was just they had people there to show that they owned that island and 200 miles of fishing all around there. Nobody else could fish. But the Germans came. And the Brazil Navy pulled their people off. Germany built two radio towers, 80 meters high. 80 meters is about, 280 feet, something like that. So they could communicate with the Schwabenland Expeditionary Force that went on down to Antarctica. What were they doing down there?
Another mapping expedition, remember? Just
mapping
like
expedition. Mm-hmm. You betcha. They flew along the lines. We can take a peek at, I didn't even have that map up here. But at any rate, they had a map of where they wanted Neue Schwabenland, which means New Swabia. And they flew along the Dornier flying boats, which were called whales. And they would drop these arrows. There's pictures of the arrows. The Dornier flying boat was picture number 27. The arrows are number 20. No, 26 was the Dornier whale. 27 are the arrows. These are stainless steel spears about 5.5 feet high. And the top end of it is a little rounded with a flat top, and it's got a swastika on it. And they every kilometer, I think, they drop one of these. And every 10 kilometers, they would drop one that had a metal 2 meters high, had a metal swastika flag. And I forget what it was, but they had something like 20 25 or 30,000 of these things that they dropped. They got to be some of them there. And that's Annette and I wanted to find when we were going to go there before we got the green light and everything was agreed to. And I came home, and then the secret police over there in Monaco beat the hell out of her and killed her little dog. And I guess that means we weren't going. So anyhow, number 16, 17, and 18 are all that same plateau, only with different angles and different German text to them. And that plateau is still there. I was there, what was it, about 10 years ago, I guess I was there. But there's no trace of this particular radio station. This was number two, because they had had, at one point in time, they had a tremendous storm, hurricane, whatever. And the topsoil is very thin there on Trinity. And there was shale rock underneath, only about 6 inches down. It washed that whole, the top of that plateau away.
But no, that's a volcanic island, Harry.
You
can see it. Those are massive deposits of lava.
Exactly.
And over time, you get a little bit of organic material on there, so you get some topsoil. Yeah, I get it.
Right, but they had such horrendous... And that's also where there was a small graveyard, and that all got washed away, too. But if you look at 19, number 19, that's the first radio shack. And there's yours truly.
And that is the first Radio Shack store in the world of the franchise. Just remember.
Yeah.
They're all gone now.
I never thought of it that way. Anyhow, off to the right of the picture, there are the two concrete pillars about 12, 14 feet high that were the basis, the base of the 80-meter tall radio antenna. And off to the left was that guy that, he was a special forces guy who was ordered to stay with me so he can carry my body back because they said, I'm an old man, I might have a heart attack. And that was 10 years ago. I was only 70, 73 then. And, but you could see out the blue ocean, it's just magnificent, except, you know, there ain't a hell of a lot to do on that island. So they have about 30 or 40 Brazil Navy people there. And about every 3 months, they rotate them back out. And just and the Brazilian Navy treated me so well. You can't go to this island unless you have their permission and their assistance. And they took me out on one of their ships and put me up in BOQ, Bachelor Officer Quarter or whatever, and just treated me so well. And I think the Brazilian Navy is top-notch, and they are the superpower Navy of South America. They had an aircraft carrier, which I think they decommissioned, but they had cruisers, they had frigates. They had one hell of a Navy there. So, but this is the remains of that Radio Shack. And let's see. We look at the next picture, picture 20, and this is sort of right beneath that Radio Shack, straight down. This is that cave that is still such a mystery. The water's deep enough and the height is high enough to where a small merchant ship could go in there and hide because it goes out the other end too. Now, were there any ships in there? We still haven't figured it out.
That cave transits the island? It goes out the other side?
Right. It goes out the little pointy end. So it doesn't go through very far. Look to number 21. That's a cross-section of it. And you can see the water is 17 meters deep. That's about 50 or 60 feet deep. And it's it gives the latitude, longitude. And then you go to number...
That's Pizarro's writing on there again?
Let me take a peek. Yes,
at the bottom,
absolutely.
21.
Mm-hmm. And
who did the drawing, do you think, of the actual geography? Who would have done that?
That's a good question.
Pizarro also?
I don't know. He never said. But a lot of these things he dug out of old files. If you go then to number 22, and you see the two arrows, that is where the tunnel went through that little point. They didn't go through the whole island, because that's a mile and a half wide. They went through that little point down at the southeastern tip of the island, where I marked with D and E. Now, this is a regular chart, but the writing on it was Pizarro's. A is where that one radio station was that has washed away to sea. Mm-hmm. B is this marker for a German sailor that got killed there in an accident in July of 45. Huh. They surrendered in May of 45, but Germany had a contingent there in July of 45. And C is where the first radio station was, where you saw the picture of me standing out in front of the, first radio shack. I like that.
Well, they were still bringing lots of people down for a long time after the
several years, because the island was strategically placed right on the 30th meridian or whatever the hell that is, the line that goes north and south. And that was right straight down from Europe. They'd go out to sea and head right straight down, and they'd come right past this island, Trinidadi, and it had freshwater springs and creeks all over the island so they could get fresh water. And they had herds of pigs and goats on the island and wild turtles so they could pick up all the meat they needed. If you don't mind eating goat and pigs. Well, pigs, that's pork. But goat, when I lived on my boat in the Bahamas, you usually got a goat burger, and it didn't taste bad, but it's pretty strong.
Hmm. Well, so, your next burger will be a cricket burger, so keep your ketchup handy.
I know where you're going with that one, but no, I it's another strange duck, that the guy that sells crickets. So we have said our goodbyes to the Cricket King. Now, you look to 23. You slow me down anytime you want, but I'm watching the clock, too, so I don't cause you any grief.
No problem.
23. That's a rock.
Just for fun, the latitude is horizontal. Longitude is up and down.
Okay.
On the planet.
So
you got it. Longitude. 30th
the 30th
longitude.
West. Right.
Okay.
So anyhow, this was painted 717. It was for the to memorialize that sailor that was killed there on the 17th of July, 1945. Months after the war ended, months after the surrender.
Was he buried under that rock?
No, he was buried in that little cemetery I told you that was up near second radio station that all washed away, and he's gone.
Yeah. No. See the trees there? Those over the millennia, seeds were brought there by birds from the mainland, and they would deposit the seeds there, and the trees would start to grow.
Yeah.
So that's how it works.
And it's hell walking on that island, because the ground, like you say, it's volcanic.
It's totally irregular. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not hard. It's millions and zillions of little pebbles. And you got all this sawgrass. You can see the sawgrass there, and it's tough walking forward because this stuff is like almost knee deep. And every time you take a step forward, you slide back half a step with all the marbles. But it's an awesome place, and I can go there again anytime I need to. But I think I got everything I needed out of there. But like I say, the Brazilian Navy was just absolutely wonderful.
Well, we still need $25 million to buy a certain parcel of land with a number of buildings on it and restore the buildings, and we would pull in millions a year in tourism. Millions a year.
And like I say, we got enough members in Shark Hunters who are carpenters,
handy,
plumbers,
handyman,
electricians.
You name it.
Yep, we got them. All we need is $25 million.
That's where we'd... That's where we'd go.
Yeah, no, in the blink of an eye.
Or less.
Anyhow.
All right, next we have...
24.
A picture of one of these wooden boats, 24, 90 tons.
Right. The Germans called it Operation Jolle, J-O-L-L-E. I'm probably pronouncing it badly. But that's a German word for yawl. And that is a type of ship. You see, on this boat, the main mast is where it's supposed to be. And the rear mast is called a jigger in the case of a yawl. It's behind the steering station, whereas a catch, that mizzenmast, it's called a mizzenmast on a catch. It's forward of the steering station, rudder point, whatever, whereas a yawl, it's behind that. I don't know. My boat was sloop rigged, so I didn't have all those sails to deal with, but this one was another 90-tonner. Now, in this chapter that we've already got done, we name every one of those spook ships. There were 15 of them. Mm-hmm. Let's see if I can scroll to it fast here. No, let's see. Boy, it's a
Your
pretty
boat
nice boat.
Just had three X's on the stern, I think, didn't it?
No more than that. I left the Chicago area with three girls on it, and one by one they went home, and one or two more had come out and joined the crew. It was a lot of fun. That was back in the 70s. Jeez. You know, if you...
Well, that's when you could have fun without playing with your life now. You don't do that anymore.
True, yeah. Well, I have been married for 36 years now, so... That's way in the back, in the past.
That's 37 years longer than I've been married.
Okay. You must have been married for a negative 1 year.
Seems like it.
Yeah. I don't know. No, I'm happy. She's a great lady, and there wouldn't be Shark Hunters if it wasn't for her, because Shark Hunters was just getting up and rolling, and I had a great job making a ton of money, and I was packing money away. And as soon as I got 50 or 60 grand in the bank, I was going to just close the door on Shark Hunters and sail off to the islands again with another batch of little dollies, and Shark Hunters never would have gone anywhere. But I married Kay and got rid of all the girlfriends, and we buckled down, and Shark Hunters is still Shark Hunters almost
now,
40
see,
years.
Now,
in February, it's
going to
be 40 years.
I know why these... Occasionally, women would come to the door with a suitcase and knock and just say, Harry, Cooper. Now I understand where they went when they left your employ. I got it.
I have nothing to say.
I have less than that to say. Now, the last picture is a boat off... That's a hell of a... It almost looks like Trindade, but it's not. That's a very formidable formation of lava, rock.
Oh, you're talking about number 23 or a different
28.
Picture?
28. 28. What is that? Is that Trindade?
No, that's Antarctica.
That's Antarctica, yeah.
All right. But what boat, right. We never found out. Pizarro pulled that out of the file. That is a boat, a submarine, a U-boat. Off the coast of Antarctica.
Okay. All right, where do we go from here? I've lost track. We jumped around a bit.
Yeah. The next one is number 25. That's the emblem of the German Antarctic Exploration, 1938-39. That was the Schwabenland Task Force, and you see up there at the top where they've got carved out Neue Schwabenland. And then they had a big flap. The Danish government says, no, that's ours. And the German government says, tough bananas. We got ships and stuff down there, so you don't get it. But that's where Annette and I wanted to go. And, Jesus, we had everything all squared away with the crown prince there of Monaco. And then all of a sudden everything
There's a hell of a lot going on. In Antarctica that we're not allowed to know about. Most of it is no-fly. It's all controlled. And there's just a lot of very eclectic material found down there, we're told.
I know. And I wouldn't have the slightest problem going down there as far as, you know, worrying about having a problem. But without a half a million bucks, you ain't going to get there. It's not like going, you know, I can do a two-week expedition in South America or in Europe for $5,000. Mm-hmm. But to Antarctica, no. Jesus, we priced it out. $250,000 would just barely help you. A half a million would be the hot setup. And if we weren't allowed to be there, well, you know, I really don't care whether I'm told you can't be there. You know me. Ein Gang verboten means Cooper's welcome here. Unless somebody wants to shoot at me, then I don't think I want to go there. But Antarctica is just an incredibly huge mystery.
Well, I get reports from here and there, and there's some very unusual things being found down there. A lot of research going on. It used to be an ice-free continent, obviously, and things changed. That, by the way, Dornier whale, the Val.
No, it's a whale. It's pronounced whale.
Four engines on that. It was a four-engine plane.
Yeah.
They didn't mess around.
No, they had some...
Some what, Harry? I lost you. Oh, we didn't lose him. All right. Yes, we did. That's the magic toot toot. That means they cut us off. They do that with Erica. Erica and I will be on our next for you. Lots of interesting material tonight as well. But this is really a roundup of just a fragment of the information that's going to be released by Harry and Shark Hunters.
We're back.
Good overview. Yeah. Well,
we must have said something that somebody didn't like.
No, they do that to you, and they do it to Erica all the time, usually once a program.
How is Erica?
She's fine. She's doing well.
Oh, good. Give her my best. She's a sweetheart. She helped me out when I was sick in the hospital.
Yep. We never forget that call.
And when you called my nurse when they were about to, I was laying there semi-comatose, and you called my nurse and yelled at her.
I'm sorry, but I wasn't going to stand to have a friend put to sleep with remdesivir. No, that's what they do.
I'm glad you lit her up like that. And they took good care of me. They gave me that monoclonium, whatever the hell.
Monoclonal antibodies.
Okay.
Which six of seven of them have been removed from service since then, by the way. I don't know which one you got, but... So whatever.
I have no
idea. You made it through a very serious
Thank
issue.
God. And I know I'm back to my old cranky, obnoxious self. I don't know if I told you or not, but... 2 weeks ago, we were heading down the road, minding our own business, and on the highway, just pulling away from a green traffic light, doing probably about 30 and accelerating, and some clown come popping out of a parking lot on the right in front of us, and then stopped. Thank God I used to drive race cars. There was no thinking. It's just reaction. I went around behind him. Mm-hmm. Anybody else would have T-boned him and probably killed the guy. But then the Irish took over, and I chased him down, and I curbed him. And here I am, a disabled 83-year-old veteran. I got out, and they yanked the guy out of the car. But thank God he was an old fart like me, too, and not carrying a gun.
Wow. You could have been another headline. No, we don't need that.
Not the right way. But, you know, as my wife pointed out later, here in Florida, almost everybody's got guns in their car.
As it should be.
Oh, yeah.
All competent people should be armed. Notice I
said
competent.
I don't carry a gun in my car because I have such a hot temper.
Yeah. Well, you know, you'd see that's called maturity.
Yeah. Well, when I was 26, I shot a guy. And, you know, a lot of paperwork. He yelled at me, though, and that guy was breaking into my house.
Well, he could have blown his head off and been perfectly right.
Yeah, true enough, and it would have saved me some money. I wouldn't have had to hire a lawyer. But I didn't want to take a chance on going to prison, so I just shot him in the leg. Slowed him down. Incidentally, here, if anybody's interested, I'll tell you the names of the 15 motor sailors, those ships, Galeana, Soizic, Mary Magdalene, Army Braz, something like that, Carmelita, Clioe, which is the picture you saw, Galician, Passim number one, KFK, which stands for Kriegs Fish Cutter, and fishing boat, named Mary, and then KFK 204, named Barbara, Jeanette 1, Jeanette 2, Santa Barbara, Passim 2, Prince Adelbert, Volcano. So these were the ones that.
Santa Barbara, that's my hometown. That's funny.
Oh, okay. Well, that's those are the boats that took the spies back and forth. The German presence in South America was huge. Yeah, we're not supposed to know how big it was.
Right.
I don't know why, but...
Well, look, we have the FBI documents blacked out, redacted. They knew.
Yeah.
They knew. They were told to lay off and stay
absolutely.
Away.
Yeah. It says right in the FBI documents they knew he was down in South America, and some of them knew where he was exactly. Mm-hmm. And then as you pointed out some time ago, Truman in middle 47 told the FBI back off. And that's because there was a quid pro quo in place.
You bet.
Know, don't hassle Hitler and we'll give you all this top secret stuff.
It's called the Advanced High Technology and Operation Paperclip, and all of those German scientists and their families who came over here. Our program, our space program, was German. And
I've
said
this
many times.
Everybody there, all the engineers, the scientists, they were all straight from Peenemünde, brought over here.
I think Kaltenbrunner was there. He was kept very, very much under wraps, but they're... I'm thinking about Hans Kammler.
Right, yeah, because Kaltenbrunner wound up being hanged.
Well, not good.
Not good.
If you want to do some research, look up Kammler, K-A-M-M-L-E-R, and then look up the first director of NASA from 1962 to 73, Dr. Kurt Debus. Who was Dr. Kurt Debus? Adolf Hitler's director of rocketry at Peenemünde during the war.
Absolutely.
And his number one was Wernher von Braun.
Yep.
So there you go. It's all there, all German, all the time.
And Clark McClellan, who wrote that book, Space, the Final Frontier, which I edited, he knew all these guys. He was friends of them.
Don't forget who got you the book.
Yeah, I know. You helped there a tremendous amount. And but this time another fellow did the cover. It was Daz Smith from England. He's another brilliant...
He's a remote viewer, Daz. Yeah.
Oh, is he? I didn't know that.
No, I sent you the copy of the book. Emailed it to you, the first copy.
Oh, okay.
From Clark, he sent it to me.
Right. And we were patching together all the different chapters because he was trying to sell the book online.
He would sell
by chapter,
one chapter at a chapter. Drove me nuts.
I can imagine. But it's gone together. And that book was selling almost as fast as Hitler in Argentina.
Yeah, well, he deserved it. Okay.
And we've got it translated into German now. It's available in German. Sharkhunters at sharkhunters.com will get the message here.
Let's get Hitler in Argentina translated into German, huh?
Yeah, my translator over there has it, but he owns a farm, and he also has a job. He is a male nurse, but he's not weird. He's got a wife and children. But his wife just had another baby, and over in Germany, a man can take 6 months off to take care of his wife and their new baby. So he's doing that because if he goes back to work, they're going to want him to take the jab, and he ain't going to have the jab. So,
no, not if he wants to live. Real
exactly.
Simple. All right.
Yeah,
Harry,
and he
thank
knows
you.
It.
Yeah.
My pleasure,
right.
Pal.
We'll talk next month, and I look forward to this. Keep me posted what you come across. This is a really a fun thing. So,
we'll
well
have
done.
Much more translated by then.
All right. Okay. Take good care.
You also.
Okay. Thanks, Harry. Okay. SharkHunters.com is the place. If you love history, even if you just like history, go there. We'll be right back with more.